other than building more supply and the sort of taxings around it, they really don't have that many levers. But we also have to remember that this is a double-edged sword in the sense that, yes, this could increase your credit rating if you're making all those payments on time, but if you miss a payment for economic reasons, this is going to lower your credit ratings.
Hi, and welcome to The Missing Middle. I'm Kara Stern.
And I'm Mike Moffat.
And today we're going to be talking about some of the promises that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has been making to help renters.
But before we have that conversation, please be sure to like, subscribe, or leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you.
So one of the things that the government's been promising is like lots of different ways on that they could be trying to help renters. And one of them is getting the rent payments to count towards their credit rating. Is that a big deal?
Well, it's potentially helpful. Now, you know, right now, sometimes it does show up, right? So it's, it depends on the landlord, the relationship they have with the banks and so on. But particularly if you're renting from a mom and pop, that's not likely to show up, right? They're not kind of submitting that to, you know, Equifax or whoever. But this, yeah, it potentially could help. The sort of theory here is that if you've made rent payments consistently on time for 4 or 5 years, that should help increase your credit rating. And right now, a lot of times you're just not getting credit for it.
If you're renting from a big purpose-built rental company, does it right now count towards your credit rating?
It might. And it's kind of loose right now. So there's no sort of requirement that this information be transmitted to banks. So the idea here is to just basically level the playing field and make sure that financial institutions have this information.
Are there a lot of people who are like close to being able to afford a home, but their credit rating is what's stopping them from getting a home? Do we know any data on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't. And it's, you know, it is pretty marginal at the end of the day, right? Because it's more based on, you know, can you afford the down payment? Do you pass a stress test? You know, those are the really transformative things. You know, whether or not your credit rating's high enough doesn't really matter that much. I do think it could be helpful here in terms of like if you're wanting a car loan or something like that, that might be helpful. But we also have to remember that this is a double-edged sword in the sense that, yes, this could increase your credit rating if you're making all those payments on time. But if you miss a payment for economic reasons, this is going to lower your credit rating. So on net, it's not necessarily better for renters. It's better for some renters, but others might be better off having the credit rating agencies or the credit agencies not know about that missed payment.
I know that it seems like obviously we talk about this a lot, how supply and demand seems to be the biggest issue. If you have an increase in supply, hopefully you'll be able to, the prices will be reasonable. And the last time I remember them decreasing, actually the only time I remember them decreasing in my lifetime is when the pandemic happened and there was a big decrease in demand. So how well is the government doing at actually lowering prices for renters?
Well, I think rents were up on new leases about 10% year over year across the country.
I can't imagine.
It's brutal. I know it's absolutely brutal. I'm happy that I've been out of the rental market for about 20 years now. Which order of government do you want to blame for that? That could be another episode. But clearly, rents are going up across the country, and ultimately, like the math is pretty clear on this that. If you have a vacancy rate below 3%, that is that, less than 3% of apartment units are open and available for rent, that's going to jack rents up. If you've got a vacancy rate of 6, 7, 10%, like we often did during the pandemic, you're going to see rents go up less than inflation and in some cases even fall. Right now across the country, you know, vacancy rates are, you know, about 1.5%. And are, you know, depending on the market, can be even lower than that. So I was talking to someone today just in the housing market in the Kingston area, you know, not a place you often think of as having kind of a broken housing market. He was telling me that vacancy rates right now in Kingston are 0.4%. So like 1/10 of what they need to be to to have a healthy market. And ultimately, that's going to determine whether or not, you know, rents are going up or going down. It's the vacancy rate. And until we have enough units that the vacancy rate goes back up to 3 or 4%, that's ultimately what's going to fix this.
So the other promises they've been making, like making sure that landlords disclose to renters what the last person was paying, is the intention of that to make it lower? Because right now what I'm thinking is, okay, my rent is $3,000 a month, and great, now I know the person before me was paying $1,500. Like, that's helpful information. Like, how is that going to lower prices? I don't get it.
It's kind of a weird one. I think the theory here is that if there's more transparency, that renters will have more bargaining power to think of. It's, you know, the same theory about eliminating blind bidding in the ownership market. The sort of theory of change here is that the buy side, whether it be the renter or the owner, the more information they have, that's going to allow them, give them more negotiating power. But again, this is the thing that kind of cuts both ways. And we've seen out in British Columbia, one landlord's association actually say, yeah, no, this is great having this extra information, because they think some of their members aren't charging enough, right? Having that kind of information is valuable. But yeah, it's kind of funny to think about that. If I'm going somewhere, let's say Kingston, for example, where it's like, okay, you're telling me that the rent is $2,500 and 5 years ago it was $1,200. I don't know how that makes me feel better about that information. I'm also like, you know what? I'd prefer you not tell me, you know, how much I'm getting screwed under the current situation. So yeah, my general philosophy is pro-transparency. I like this. I think this data is going to help housing researchers like me. So I have kind of selfish reasons to like this. But, you know, does it really help renters that much?
Does it help them at all?
It might not. One province it might help is in Quebec, just because there are rules. The rent control rules work differently here there than they do here. That, you know, Ontario, once the tenant leaves, the new landlord can basically charge whatever they want, right? The rent control is on that particular tenant, not the unit overall. And Quebec is different, where the rent control is actually on the unit. So it actually does matter a little bit, because the landlords have less power there to raise rents during a change in tenants. So that transparency can help people avoid getting cheated. But overall, I don't think this is going to make that much of a difference. Again, I like it on transparency grounds. I like it on housing researchers like me having more data. Yeah, more data. Yeah, I like it for that reason. But is it going to help renters that much? I really don't think so. And it's certainly no replacement for a 3% vacancy rate. One of the things that the federal government announced is having a template tenant landlord agreement, like a template rental agreement. I think that could be helpful.
Do each province already have their own at this point? Like, I know Ontario has a standard lease. Do other provinces all have their own?
Yeah, I'm actually not sure, to be honest. It may be so our listeners and viewers, let us know, because I actually don't know the answer to that question. So if you know what things are like in your province, I suspect they all do, but I can't confirm that. But yeah, I could see these things being helpful. I think the challenge here is that the federal government really doesn't have this many direct levers on this. And go back to last summer in Hamilton, Ontario, where the prime minister said that housing is not a direct federal responsibility, but they have a role to play. And everybody lost their minds, and everybody was criticizing the prime minister, criticizing the federal government, going, you have to do more, you have to do more, you have to do more. Now it feels like they're scrambling, going, okay, what can we do, realizing that most of this isn't directly in our jurisdiction, which again was the prime minister's argument, but are there ways that we can structure this that allow it to kind of make it our jurisdiction without violating the letter of the Constitution and arguably the spirit of the Constitution?
Are they succeeding?
Well, I think they are changing the conversation. in the sense that the conversation has gone from, hey, the prime minister's not doing enough, to, hey, the prime minister's playing in our backyard and we don't like that. We don't want him to. So I think they're succeeding on that end. And again, I think these, this extra data, the template, like the, and the, having it on your, showing up on your credit score. Like, I think these are all fine things. I think they kind of go around the margin, but it certainly has changed the conversation from, we want more federal government to a conversation of, well, actually, we want less federal government.
What's the like lowest hanging fruit solution for that they can do in the federal jurisdiction to help renters?
On the rental side, yeah, it's really, to other than building more supply and the sort of taxings around it, they really don't have that many levers. But I think they have to try. And the reason is that Ontario's rental system is broken. And because our, and our ownership system, but in general, Ontario's housing market is broken. And what we've seen over the last year is 50 to 60,000 people on net move out of Ontario and move to other provinces. And we can kind of divide it a third, a third, a third. A third have gone to Alberta, a third have gone to Atlantic Canada, and a third have gone everywhere else. Well, the challenge is that if Ontario doesn't get its act together on housing and all of these people move out to New Brunswick, no matter what New Brunswick does, they're just going to attract more and more families from Ontario, right? So you get all these spillover effects. And an argument I've made several times is that when you have something where you have these interprovincial spillover effects, I think that creates room for the federal government to say, no, look, because Ontario is putting all of these costs on New Brunswick, that, in my mind, creates a need for the federal government to step in and go, no, guys, we got to work together on this because, poor New Brunswick, they're just going to get steamrollered by, all the moving trucks coming out of the GTA. And if you're one of those folks who've moved out of Ontario, maybe gone to New Brunswick or Alberta, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have a burning housing or economics question, please feel free to reach out to us at missingmiddlepodcast@gmail.com.
And thanks as always to our producer, Meredith Martin. And we'll see you next time.